This is 2FM's Game On.
Yes, big thanks to Darren and all the gang on 2FM Drive. It is Tuesday, the 25th of March. I'm Andrew O'Connor. You're listening to Game On with myself and Ruby Walsh.
Evening, Andrew. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Paul Curry and Mark Langdon talk football as the international window rumbles on while Trent Alexander-Arnold edges closer to an Anfield exit.
And in basketball, Orla Keeling looks ahead to Claire Melia's Euro Cup final tomorrow. Plus, there's replay news closer to home in the Super League. Plus, in rugby, Neil Tracy sets us up for Munster's trip to Mayo this weekend where they'll face Connacht. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187-9200. Now, let us crack on. It's been a very busy day so far, Ruby. I'll just update people on some of the headlines. Corrigan Park in Belfast will stage the Ulster Football Championship meeting of Antrim and the All-Ireland champions Armagh on April the 12th next. It was a case of I suppose, of Newbridge of nowhere going north. The game will have a throw-in at 12.30 to allow Armagh fans time to travel to Croke Park that same evening for the Lidl Ladies National League final with Kerry. In soccer news, Celtic striker Saoirse Noonan is back for the Republic of Ireland squad for next month's doubleheader of Nations League games with Greece. Chloe Mustaki also returns to the fray, and Shelburne midfielder Evian Clancy returns for the first time since winning her one and only cap so far against Morocco back in November 2022. We'll have more of that with Paul Curry in just a couple of minutes' time. Northern Ireland are in action this evening. It's a friendly against Sweden. They've just kicked off in Stockholm. And another soccer news, Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers has been given a suspended one-match touchline ban by UEFA after being deemed to have played a part in delaying kickoff in his side's Champions League last 16 game at Bayern Munich. In rugby, Ireland fly-half Sam Prendergast has agreed a new contract with Leinster to remain at the province next season. The new deal is between the 22-year-old and Leinster Rugby rather than a central contract with the RFU, which is quite interesting. We'll be speaking to Neil Tracy about that later on. And Connacht will once again be without head coach Pete Wilkins for this week's URC Interpro meeting with Munster in Castlebar. He remains on sick leave, having also missed last weekend's game with Ospreys. Scrum coach Cully Tucker will continue to lead the side in his absence. And Ireland interim coach Simon Easterby and England's Richard Wigglesworth look set to be appointed to the Lions coaching staff for this summer's tour of Australia tomorrow. Head coach Andy Farrell is on sabbatical from his role with Ireland, and he will reveal his team of assistants in London tomorrow morning. In athletics, female athletes will soon have to undergo a one-time genetic test to compete in women's events, and World Athletics President Sebastian Coe has indicated that regulations will be drafted soon to conduct the non-invasive cheek swab or dry blood spot analysis tests. Athletes will have to take the test just once in their careers to show that they do not have the SRY gene, which determines male sex in humans and most other mammals. And other big news closer to home, Ruby, Kate O'Connor returning after her brilliant silver medal at the World Indoor Athletics Championships in China at the weekend. Great scenes in Dublin Airport.
Yeah, great scenes in Dublin Airport. Ireland's first medal at the World Indoor Athletics Championships since Dermot O'Rourke in 2006. So a big well done to Kate O'Connor in the pentathlon, of course, who 60-metre hurdles, shot put, high jump, long jump, and the 800 metres. And she got a nice ovation when she got back into Dublin Airport, and Conor Hunt of RTÉ was there to meet her.
You're making a habit of this.
Oh, I don't know.
how are you feeling now? Another broad welcome home for you again.
I know, it's amazing. It's so nice to get back. It's been a long day of travel. But yeah, it's so nice to get back home, back to see my family, and it's been a great turn up here, so yeah.
It's 2 weeks you'll never forget, I suppose, your kind of personal best and all. How do you kind of look back at it, although it's still so fresh, I suppose?
I think that it'll probably take me a couple of weeks just to actually, like, understand what I've just done. At the moment, I'm just kind of going with the flow and just, yeah, trying to take it in as much as I can. But yeah, I think it'll take a little bit of time to actually be like, whoa, I've just done that.
You're in the form of your life, aren't you?
Yeah. And it's great. And I'm enjoying it. And I'm injury free. And I hope to, just keep training hard and win more medals for Ireland.
And what's your plan now? A couple of weeks off?
Oh yeah, definitely. My brain needs it. A couple of weeks. I'll go off and chill for a little bit and then get back in the hard work.
It's just incredible. I don't know how to sum it up. She's just been absolutely fantastic. Training's gone so well this year. She's starting to perform to her potential. Yes, exciting times.
How do you feel as her father and coach, I suppose?
Sometimes you're in a split role, I suppose. You're dad and then when you're out coaching, you're coaching. But Kate's an incredible athlete to coach. You get to the track and she does unbelievable things at certain times. It's fun. Like, it's great to be involved with her and to be able to help her. I'm so enjoying it. You know, and coming away with medals like she's just done is extraordinary.
I've had the best 2 weeks watching my daughter. I'm looking at her on the television and to me she's just Kate, you know, but she's just done such a fantastic thing. I'm so proud, so proud. I can't wait to get her on her own and just have the chats.
Yes, very proud parents there welcoming their daughter, their victorious daughter, Kate O'Connor, home at Dublin Airport today. In other news, basketball, Cork rivals Demon and Neptune will have to replay their Super League quarterfinal playoff after a scorekeeping error over the weekend. Demons won 193 on the court last Sunday, but it was later discovered a Neptune score in the opening quarter had been awarded Demons. And whilst that error was corrected at halftime, the points were not deducted from the Demons tally. We will talk to Orla Keeling about that in a little while. And in racing news, Ruby, Patrick Mullins expected to pick up a plum ride on Nick Rocket in Saturday week's Aintree Grand National. The Willie Mullins trained 8-year-old is a major contender for the world's most famous steeplechase following winter wins in the Thiestes at Goran Park, and the Bobby Joe Chase at Fairy House. Stable jockey Paul Townend looks set to stick with last year's winner I Am Maximus. Any thoughts on that yourself?
I would have thought that was fairly straightforward. I would have thought Paul would definitely stay with I Am Maximus. Well, you'd probably have five or six runners in the race, and due to weight restrictions, it kind of restricts what Patrick was going to ride. So Nick Rocket would fit the bill for him, an improving sort. Nick Rocket, good winner of the test, as he was good in the Bobby Joe. Grand National could suit him, but yeah, it'll be a good race again this year.
Yeah, we look forward to that Saturday week, the world's biggest race. And a text already into 51552. Paul Curry is in studio with us, I'm glad to say. And Paul, Ireland qualify for the Under-17 World Cup for the first time ever. History makers, a great boost for Irish football, says one texter. And we're all in full agreement with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, it seems to be doom and gloom when we talk about domestic football in this country. And this is certainly... And there are signs of hope, particularly across our underage teams. And the Irish Under-17s team won 5-0 today against Iceland. And what that has meant, Andrew, is that they are one of the four best runners-up in the second round of qualifying for the European Under-17 Championships. What that then means is they qualify for the Under-17s World Cup, which takes place in Qatar in November of this year. So a huge boost for Colin O'Brien, who's done fantastic work, I should mention, in that job. You know, if you think back, I think it was 2 years ago, the Under-17 side qualified for the quarterfinals of the European Championships, only to be knocked out by Spain, and a certain Lamine Yamal scored that night for Spain, so they were knocked out, I think, by the eventual winners. But a huge boost, like the exposure that these young players are going to get to playing not only against the top countries and top players, but for their own careers and their own development. The likes of a Mason Melia, who has used situations like this to progress on in their career, and you see the move that he's made only recently. So a fantastic opportunity for those players, and brilliant that, you know, they're going to be history makers and they'll be the first set of players to go on and represent the under-17s at the World Cup.
And you mentioned Mason Melia, he was on the score sheet, of course, for the under-21s last night, Jim Crawford's team winning 3-1 over Hungary. And as you said, sort of, there are green shoots afloat.
Yeah, there are, and I think it was very important for Jim Crawford. This is obviously a new crop of players that will take us on into the next qualifying campaign, but there's still a couple of players there who were involved in the last one, which ended not as ideal as maybe one may have hoped, with poor kind of results against Italy and Norway, conceding late. We seemed to be in control of that group for a long period of time, and then we missed out on automatic qualification and then a playoff place. So to just get the wheels in motion again, a good result against Hungary, that will then carry them into the qualifying campaign that will take place later on this year. It's actually a group, Andrew, where I would expect we would at least get the playoff spot. We're in a group there with England, Slovakia, Kazakhstan, Moldova and Andorra. So I would certainly hope that we would be one of those sides, probably with Slovakia, to contend for that playoff place. So a big result. Good to see new faces in that 21 side. Mason Melia on the score sheet again last night. He has broken Troy Parrott's record as the youngest scorer for the under-21s. He was really sharp to win the penalty, put it away quite well. And then the other two goals were really well worked set pieces. So a couple of players to look for in that squad. But I think it's just positive, Andrew, to see, you know, our teams at least competing to get to the latter stages of qualifying campaigns, and the 17's obviously gone through. Hopefully we can get a couple of the 21's players into the senior squad, and the best way of doing that is by actually qualifying for these competitions and progressing their own careers.
And that all happens a couple of days after. We have our second win in this in a row for the seniors, 2-2-1 wins over Bulgaria. We had a very positive chat, I suppose, relatively speaking, Ruby, so how we normally speak about the senior side, but we had a lot of positive things to say last night. What was your quick reaction on Sunday's performance?
Yeah, I thought we did well, Andrew. I think there's signs of what it is Hamer's trying to do with this squad. I think it's taken him a couple of games, and it'll be similar with Carla Ward with the women's team. Like, you need a couple of camps to get an understanding of who the personalities are and who are, I guess, the players they're going to execute out in your game plan. And I think there's a definite sort of way of playing that you can see within this Irish side, and there's a couple of patterns of play and getting players into promising positions. It's just now whether or not we can be a little bit nastier to play against and stop conceding soft goals, because there are certain hopes further at the top end of the pitch, particularly with the likes of Troy and Evan Ferguson, even Adam Ida, who came off, and Finn Azaz has certainly had a really good window, and he'll be on the radar of, I think, a couple of Premier League sides I was reading today. But yeah, listen, there's progression there. I still think we're very short in the middle of the park. That would be a major concern for me. I don't think we have a major presence there. I think Nathan Collins is potentially one of those players who could step into midfield. We've seen him do that role before. We've got an abundance of centre half, so maybe moving Nathan forward makes sense. But
what about Jack Taylor? I mean, we didn't see a whole lot of him last night, but yeah, in terms of a progression.
I don't know. Like, I look at the top end of the pitch, Troy Parrott has come in to lead the line, and he's done that particularly well. A lot of that goes back to the fact that he's playing week in, week out for his club. I think people need to be playing consistently. For players to come in who aren't, it's a very difficult job to do. So I'm not sure Taylor comes into that conversation until he starts playing a little more regularly for Ipswich. But there's definitely signs of hope there, and I think Hamer deserves credit for that. But I've mentioned this a couple of times before. There's a lot of players in that squad, Andrew, who have been involved, let's say, for the last 24, 36 months. They haven't won a huge amount of games for Ireland. So just to win two games would build confidence and build a bit of belief amongst that squad, and hopefully, you know, help matters around that camp. But yeah, it's moving in the right direction, but results are so important for this squad, and to get two was certainly a boost.
So men's football on the up, Ruby. As we turn our attention to the women, who've had a little stumble recently, but they have a new challenge now.
They have. Carla Ward named her squad today for the double header in the Nations League with Greece, saving Clancy, Susan Noonan, and Bristol City's Chloe Mustaki are all back in. I think we have some audio to play.
Yeah, Tony O'Donoghue caught up with Carla, and we can hear their conversation now.
Carla, just first of all, to reflect on the last game, and I'm sure there were a lot of learnings from that. What were your thoughts?
You know what? I actually... funny thing to say, but I think it's a blessing in disguise, because I think if you win 1-0, you probably don't find out an awful lot, and it can sometimes mask. I think we found out a lot about where we're at, a lot about the reality of the position we're in, probably what I can and can't do with the team. And like I said to you post-match, I think, you know, I take that one myself, because I've tried new things, but I wanted to find out a few things, and I think I did. I got answers. But then also what it allowed us to do is deep dive and reflect with every single player, which we did post-camp. We had an individual review, which was good. And I learned an awful lot, about maybe, probably didn't realise how much there's still a lot of hurt from previous camps and the Wales camp, and maybe I didn't quite realise just how much hurt there is. There was probably an element where, look, we've lost not just three leaders. Quinny's obviously out, and that's four big leaders. I think if you take four leaders out of any team around the world, it hurts you. And I would say it was a really, really powerful game in terms of learning for what we're going to face now.
So what was the most significant thing that you did wrong?
That I did wrong?
Because you said it was on you.
Yeah, in terms of, in hindsight, I've tried, you know, I've played a couple of players maybe not in their natural positions. I think that's something I wanted to look at. Answered questions, I'm not sure, did wrong. I think they're valuable lessons. But yeah, I'd say overall, there's probably a couple of things we'll tweak, certainly. I think I said that after the game to these guys that were there, and yeah, you're going to tweak things. But Somebody here asked, I don't know if it was yourself, asked, is it a revolution or an evolution? Yeah, and exactly. I said evolution, and we want to continue carrying on. But I think actually there has to be an element of, there's a bit of a transition period here. And I actually said it in my interview. This moment I'm coming into might be difficult at the start, messy in the middle and beautiful at the end, I hope. But I think there's a bit of a moment where we have to really identify and look at what we've lost and what we've got, and try and work a way to keep moving forward.
I know you've got these Greece games, but the USA games were announced yesterday.
Yeah.
How important will they be?
Really important, because you find a lot out when you play the very, very best, and challenging times is where you really find out about yourselves and where you're at. And they're the best in the world, you know. I've had the pleasure of working with them, and they're unbelievable at everything they do. And I think we can really go there and express ourselves and see, you know, find out a little bit more about ourselves against the very, very best.
Was your relationship with Emma helpful in arranging the game?
Do you know what? I actually said in my interview we should play against the US, and they'd already the conversations were already started. So I can't claim that one, sadly. I think the conversation started back in November, December.
That is Carla Ward talking to our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. And, I mean, she doesn't sound as sort of confident as she did before the Slovenia game, but a 4-0 loss, it's difficult to be confident after that. I mean, I think the whole squad was shook by that poll.
Yeah, I think they were. And listen, Carla Ward was very honest in her assessment of that window, and she said that she tinkered with the formation, and she tinkered with maybe playing a couple of players out of position, and maybe she's learned that it was too much of a gamble, and it was too much of a change from maybe what this squad was used to doing. But like, similar to the men's side, it takes time, Andrew. Like, there's a lot of change happening there. There's a lot of players who've maybe progressed on in their career, and it maybe the squad needs a bit of freshening up. So it's going to take a bit of time for her to understand who are the players that she's going to progress with, and what shape or what formation is going to best suit those players. So she made a couple of changes to that side. Some of them were enforced because of injuries, but nice to see a bit of involvement from players who are based here domestically. I think it's good to see Saoirse Noonan in the squad. She's been doing fantastic things for Glasgow Celtic, and scored a huge number of goals, so that sort of confidence at the top end of the pitch will help. But it's difficult. Like, she's had a turbulent time between the results and the performances, but also the Colin Healy situation. There just seems to be a lot of noise around the camp, so I'm sure she's looking forward to maybe putting some of that behind her and cracking on with this campaign. And they've got two games against Greece, who've lost their opening two fixtures within this Nations League campaign. So they are to an extent, Andrew, must-win games, because what you don't want is a situation where you're too far behind Slovenia at the top end of the group. And Nations League is obviously a really good platform to build up on. You've got playoffs at the end of campaigns that gives you a bit of security net for qualifying for major competitions. So I think people need to be patient with Carla Ward. There's obviously huge expectations around this women's side, what they've done in the last number of years, but patience is needed. Like, change takes time, and it's going to take her a bit of time to figure out, I guess, what is the best formula going forward for this side.
Paul, when you listen to Carlin, it's always dangerous to second guess what anybody means, but evolution is bringing a team forward, but revolution is like what you suggested. Are there new faces needed to bring this team forward?
Yeah, I think that probably is evident within the squad, Ruby. I guess the question is there enough quality coming through from some of the, you know, the younger stars of the women's national team? Who are they going to be? Is there somebody that you can kind of build a team around? I'm sure Carla Ward's looking for those people and those personnel. Has she got them ready to go? Is there, you know, a Katie McCabe or a Denise O'Sullivan of a younger age coming through? I'm not sure we've seen that just yet. So she's maybe having to lean on some of the more experienced players who potentially have maybe some of their better years behind them, or maybe they don't fit into exactly what it is she's trying to do. So maybe it's going to be a case whereby you have to be a little bit more pragmatic and maybe not change as much just yet, and maybe kind of try graft out a couple of results with the players who've done it over the last number of years, and then look for those rising stars to come in and see whether or not they're going to be strong enough to kind of carry the torch going forward. But yeah, I think Carla Ward, Ruby, has probably learned a lot about the squad and maybe where some of the pitfalls exist within that side, and maybe where some of the strengths lie too.
I'm sure she has, and she will learn more in those two games against Greece. Mark Langdon joins us on the line as well. Mark, how are you this evening?
I'm good, thanks, Ruby. And yourself?
Oh, great, thank God. Mark, is Trent Alexander eventually going to make his way out of Anfield?
Oh, he definitely, well, I'd say definitely, he almost certainly appears to be sort of on his way out of Anfield. You know, big steps forward with his negotiations, it sounds like, between himself and Real Madrid, leaving Liverpool on a free transfer. I've seen, you know, the sort of Liverpool fan reaction has been strong against the kind of one of their own, really, seen sort of him sort of mocked up as, you know, as somebody in the traitors, sort of pictures of snakes next to him. So it's not gone down too well, this news today. He's a brilliant footballer. It's going to hurt Liverpool, and I think it'll hurt because, you know, he is one of their own.
But it's been on the cards for quite a while, hasn't it? Sure, like, there was three big names in Liverpool, all out of contract. Someone was going to go, and it kind of always looked obvious like it was going to be Trent.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you could also, I think, successfully argue that of the three, he's the easiest to replace. You know, Salah's goals and assists. I think Van Dijk's leadership is integral, really, to Liverpool's success. And, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold's a fantastic footballer with a few flaws in there as well. He's a fairly unusual right back, and he wouldn't be easy to replace like for like, but you've already got Conor Bradley there that can play as a more conventional right back. I think it's the fact that he's left on a free transfer that's really going to annoy Liverpool fans, because, you know, if he was on the kind of transfer market and you wonder the value of Alexander-Arnold, it'd be difficult to say that, you know, he'd be, what, I don't know, 70, 80 million, I would have thought sort of pretty comfortably. So it's a big hit for Liverpool to have to take. It'll be, you know, if they can get Van Dijk signed and Salah signed and they win the Premier League, it still won't have been too bad a season.
Mark, will that focus the minds of Anfield management in dealing with those other two situations, Salah and Van Dijk?
I'm not sure it will. You know, I think that Liverpool's ownership and the people that have been running the football department have not been pressurised by outside noise and outside influences. If you go back to the summer, when they were being mocked for not having made a signing, and then Chiesa came in very late, but they were always calm that, you know, they were doing what they felt was right for the club. You could even sort of argue that Arne Slot wasn't sort of sexy signing really to replace Jurgen Klopp, but again, it was just a calmness. So I don't think they will allow sort of one sort of, I suppose, you know, player leaving to suddenly change what they were looking to do. And I think, as Ruby said a couple of minutes ago there, this was on the cards. I don't think this has come as like a bolt out of the blue to Liverpool. Alexander-Arnold has clearly been talking to Real Madrid for a while.
Okay, and Conor Bradley, Paul, is the sort of the natural replacement within the squad, but you'd probably expect them to go to the market and get a bit of a bolster at right back, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd maybe expect that they'd bolster with a bit of experience. Like, Conor Bradley is still very young in his own career, and I think it's a lot of pressure to put on him to go in and replace Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Is he a better defender than Trent Alexander?
Yeah, potentially. But I think, you know, when you think of Trent, you don't necessarily think of his defensive ability. You think about his ability to create chances and his passing range and how he's able to kind of spray the ball from any position on the park. So it's a huge job for whoever it is to go in and replace, and it's a lot of pressure to put on Bradley. Yes, he's got a bit, you know, defensively, but we've only seen snippets of him. I think it's a lot easier when you're coming in and playing for a game or two, and maybe you don't get to see some of the gaps within his game. He's done fantastic any time he's played, and he's very aggressive in a challenge, but he certainly doesn't carry the same sort of ability as Trent on the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if they bolstered with a bit more experience in that position. And, like, right back is now going to become a little bit of a problem. Left back is also a massive problem. Like, Andy Robertson has done well this year, but you can see his legs are starting to fail on him, and that's certainly a position that they need to at least bolster up and put some cover around Robertson.
Mark, it's 2015 since FIFA became mired in allegations of fraud and corruption, and this morning, Seb Blatter and Michel Platini were found not guilty and have walked free.
They have. This was all in relation to payment from Blatter to Platini and Swiss police. This was the second time it's actually gone to court. They were acquitted the first time on fraud charges. Back into the court today, I think my nan always said, if you've got nothing nice to say about people, then don't say nothing at all. And I know that sort of the lawyers will be listening. So I have to be careful here what you say. But it's been something that's kind of tainted the game for the last decade, really. Two, you know, huge names, Platini as a footballer and Blatter as an official, they will feel vindicated in their kind of, you know, the fact that they've always said that they've not been guilty of fraudulent activity, and they've won their day in court again.
Yeah, it has to be said that both men have always denied any wrongdoing in relation to the payments. So just to support your
Andrew,
legal arguments
I think I think the best line in that comes from Dominic Nellan, who's Platini's solicitor. He said, the Office of the Attorney General has not managed to find a single piece of evidence of incriminating evidence for over 10 years. And these proceedings were not justified and should never have been conducted. So they're going to hit their own legal case. The shoe's on the other foot now, which is interesting.
Yes.
Or will be interesting, as the fella says.
Possibly.
World Cup qualifiers tonight, Mark. Loads of them on all around the world. Argentina and Brazil, probably the headline game, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Due to the changes now, 48 teams going to the World Cup. It's hard not to qualify from South America. It's a tough old job. You've got to finish basically like last or bottom two to not go to the World Cup. But Argentina can book their slot, and they'd love to do it against Brazil. The holders used to get a free pass into the World Cup, but because of the fact that we've got three joint or co-hosts this time around, you've got to qualify. But Argentina have been the best team in sort of South America and the world in the last few years. Big rivalry between the teams. No Lionel Messi for Argentina. He's injured at the moment, but still got a lot of sort of players in place that won that World Cup, particularly defensively. Emi Martinez, Christian Romero and Otamendi, the two centre-backs in front of the Villa goalkeeper. They're ever-present. If they're available, they always play. Brazil have had a really tough time in qualifying so far. They needed a very, very late goal from Vinicius to win at the weekend, 2-1 against Colombia. They're making a mess of qualifying, but they should do enough to get there. But they need to step up massively in Buenos Aires to sort of stem this Argentinian tide. At the moment, there's a big gulf between the two teams. We're only, 15 months out from the World Cup? If it was played kind of this summer, there's only one team in South America you could fancy to win the World Cup, and it wouldn't be Brazil.
I'm going to test your soccer knowledge now, Mark, for a second. In the CAF, Comoros are playing Chad. Burundi are playing the Seychelles. Rwanda are playing Lesotho. Benin are playing South Africa. And the local derby, Sudan versus South Sudan. I mean, of those, the 48 teams are going to get there. Are we going to have teams that we've never even heard of at the World Cup?
We probably will have sort of smaller nations and those with less of a reputation for football, unquestionably. Opening up to 48 teams was a vote winner. Let's put it that way, for Infantino, the FIFA president. You know, if you're one of those smaller nations and you're voting for who should be the FIFA president, the one that says we're going to make it 48 teams becomes a lot more appealing than anybody saying it should stay at 32 teams. Talking of Chad, if you go onto social media this week, you'll see the performance of the Chad striker. His name escapes me, but you've only got to type in Chad striker, and there's these highlights. I was going to say highlights, they're more lowlights. He hasn't got a club at the moment. He looks like he maybe hadn't played football before either. It was a spectacularly bad performance from him. So that's all I know about Chad at the moment.
I think you'll find that Mark has passed that test, in all fairness.
I would have absolutely thought so.
Oh, I see, at least. The other thing, before we get away from the matches tonight, Argentina and Brazil, before they even play, Uruguay will play Bolivia in Bolivia. And if Uruguay managed to beat Bolivia, Argentina are already through. Will that make a big difference to how Argentina go into the game if that happens?
No, Andrew. No, it won't. I think Argentina know that they're going to qualify anyway.
But they still want to beat Brazil.
They'll want to beat Brazil. The football, and this is, I think, so you get a lot of rivalries both at club and international level that have got actually nothing to do with football. This is, they'll be outside influences. But the Brazil and Argentina rivalry is nearly always just down to sport. And I think that's what makes it so brilliant, really. It's just a football rivalry, and there'll probably be as many red cards as goals tonight, I would have thought.
I've met a lot of happy Argentinians in my life, and it's always been a pleasure to meet them. The happiest Argentinian I ever met was after Germany's 7-1 victory over Brazil. And I think it was the happiest the whole Argentinian nation had ever been in their lives. Before we let you go, I want to ask you about some news from Italy. Juventus sack manager Thiago Motta, after just 9 months in charge, they replaced him with a former midfielder of theirs, Croatian Igor Tudor. And Motta, he departs with the 36-time Serie A champions, just 1 point outside the Champions League qualification, places in fifth. Doesn't seem like a lot, but his final match in charge was a 3-0 defeat at Fiorentina last weekend, and that was after they'd been thrashed 4-0 at home by Atlanta the previous week. They have no patience in Turin.
They don't, and you know, Thiago Motta, last season at Bologna, did a brilliant job, got them into the Champions League. He looked ready for the step up. Juventus now find themselves below Bologna in Serie A this season. So Bologna have got no worse despite letting Thiago Motta head off to Juventus. I think their transfers have been atrocious. Now, whether you can blame the coach for that, I'm not so sure. But, you know, the Bournemouth centre-back, Huijsen, he was allowed to leave for €15 million. You're talking about one of the most highly rated centre-backs in Europe. Now, they spent €50 million on Douglas Luiz, who's been shocking in midfield. They let Moise Kean go to Fiorentina for just over €10 million. He's the second top scorer in Italy. He now plays up front for Italy and scored twice against Germany in midweek. So you've got this sort of issue as coach to blame. Is it the signings? When that happens, it's always remarkable how many times the people in the boardroom decide it's the coach that was to blame for those decisions. So I think Thiago Motta will be back, but he definitely didn't have a great time in Turin.
OK, well, we'll see how they get on. Tudor's first game in charge will be a home match against Genoa in Serie A on Saturday after the international break finishes. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post, thank you very much for joining us, and Paul Curry as well. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we will be talking basketball.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Yes, it is. It is 6:38 this Tuesday evening. Delighted to say we are joined in studio by Orla Keeling, and we're going to talk basketball. Big story today, Orla. The National League Committee ruled that the Domino's Men's Super League playoff quarterfinal between UCC Demons and Energy Wise Ireland Neptune is to be replayed following a scoring error made by the game official during the first quarter of last Sunday's game at the Mardike. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, a very unfortunate kind of result in terms of from a broader perspective of the product. This is the second year in a row that our playoffs have kind of had a bit of drama around it in terms of from the wider media spec in terms of covering the game. So what happened was in the first quarter, the officials ruled a score to the incorrect team, and then at halftime it was brought to the attention and between the table officials and the referees and the commissioner on the table, so we'll say 2 points were awarded to the incorrect team. So what was happened was then the 2 points were corrected. However, they'd never removed the other 2 points. So instead of it becoming, so it started at 2-0, it ended as 2-2, and it should have ended again as 2-0, obviously with a different team. So really unfortunate to see from a broader perspective of the product. This is what's dominating the headlines. But look, that's the reality of it now.
Really tough on the players as well, that they have to face the same challenge all over again and get themselves rehyped up.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got the other side of it as well, Tralee Warriors awaiting that game as well. It looks like that semi-final will be played next week, midweek, obviously because there's a time crunch in terms of getting the games done before the final as well. So it's difficult in a lot of people.
And it's going to happen. There's no chance of an appeal.
From what I understand, and in terms of the statement, there is no chance to appeal the decision, so it will go ahead. I think the game is scheduled for this weekend.
But it's not all bad for basketball, Ruby. Hold on, I'll give you a microphone. That'll be handy. That'll be much easier to hear you.
It would be always a help, Andrew. But look, night follows day, so good always follows bad. But obviously, the story of Claire Melia, Monastrevin native Claire, who will become the first woman to play in a European final as her Boxall Ferrol side face a French team whose name I can't pronounce in the Euro Cup Women's Final on Wednesday night. This is massive for Claire Melia, for female basketball players, full stop.
Yeah, absolutely, Ruby. Like, I had written a couple of lines a couple of weeks ago and I had kind of put together three separate headlines to kind of draw people in. It's the best Irish athlete you haven't heard of. You know, there's Spanish fans that show up with Irish flags. They wear red wigs. They have kids showing up dressed as shamrocks or St. Patrick. And, you know, she's a first-year professional, has brought her team and led her team to the equivalent of, from a football perspective, the Europa League finals. So you've got a Cinderella story, a team in Galicia that, you know, the coach tried to sign Claire a number of years ago and kept in touch, and thankfully kept in touch with her, and Claire made the jump this year to play professionally and has now led her team as a first year pro. It's remarkable, and I think it's a story that should be known nationwide, not just in basketball circles.
Well, I agree with you. Look, she's from Monastrevin, which is 15 minutes from where I live, and I hadn't heard of Claire Amelia. I do know there's no basketball team in Monastrevin though. So she started in Port Arlington, she was on the Ireland under 18, she went from there to the Portlaoise Panthers. This has been some rise for Claire.
Yeah, Claire grew up in Monastrevin, as you said, and until recently, I think there's a new secondary school there that has a basketball court. I call that the Claire Amelia effect, but learned her trade in the driveway against her dad and her sisters. She says it was the perfect practice for the Euro Cup coming up against WNBA and Olympic medalists. And yeah, look, as you said, it's not her first time actually making history. She helped Ireland win a silver medal at the under 18 Europeans in Dublin and was named an All-Star 5, you know, alongside girls that went to the States. And she tried her hand at basketball in the States, you know, didn't enjoy it and made a great point. I was chatting to her there recently. You know, it's not just all about going to the States. You know, there are other routes. And look, she's made a route for herself, and not only for herself, she's put Ireland on the basketball map, which is, you know, the club president, I think when her coach approached him about signing Claire, he couldn't understand why he wanted a player from Ireland. You know, we're not a stronghold at all. But look, she's changed that perspective for the whole community.
But for Claire, for herself, does she even speak Spanish? I mean, this is a huge adventure.
No, she doesn't. She was telling me that her teammates, there's two girls there that translate for herself and some of the other professionals. So she's practicing her Spanish as well, maybe for the next while. But no, look, it's a huge, huge opportunity for her and for from a personal perspective, you know, to be on this level and, you know, to showcase her talent. You know, we were speaking there before it came on air. Like, she was battling against, you know, a girl that won an Olympic silver medal and it was predicted to go top five in the WNBA draft. And look, Claire really put it up to her and scored 27 points and really put on a show. So look, that's the level that she's competing on and excelling.
Yes, she sure is. And Portlaoise Panthers, the Glanmire, Trinity Meters and Colester. Claire Amelia, let's hear from the lady herself.
Yeah, we shall indeed.
And time's about to run out and history is made for Baxie Farrell. Cinderella story will continue for the Spanish team. They started from the bottom and now they're in the final. They started in the qualifiers and now they will advance to their very first Euro Cup final.
Tell me your club, the club you play for in northern Spain, Baxie Ferrol. You actually lost the second leg of the semi-final to Leon, but you had a big enough first leg lead that you could afford to do that.
Yeah, we won the first leg by 31 points. I think we lost the second one by 11 or that. Well, it didn't really matter once we didn't lose by 32. Grand, we were safe.
Malia, 4-3, yes! Has got all 5 points for Baxie thus far.
So were there some anxious moments looking at the scoreboard and trying to work out what the aggro position was?
Yeah, like the Leon were a very strong team. I think we surprised ourselves even in the home leg that we won by that much. But probably just near in the last quarter when they went up by 20, you know. There was only 12 points that they needed to get to go through. But thankfully we pulled back and made the gap a bit smaller.
Looking inside to go to Malia. One-on-one. Twists and turns up and under. And she is fouled. She's really patient underneath with her footwork. She knows that Malanga is taller than her, but she's using her size very well. She makes one of two so far, leading all scores with 15 points. Yeah.
tell me about your club, Baxi Ferrol. So Ferrol is this beautiful town where you live in northern Spain. It's not a very big town, though. Sure it's not?
No, no, it's small enough. I used to think it was the same size as Monastereven until my family came out and called me, Ross. No, it's a nice little town, like the nice streets and stuff, and it's a really good community atmosphere, and the support from the town is just amazing as well. Like, I think even if we don't win the final, there'll still be celebrations for a few days after when we come back. But no, it's great, the support that we have, like, you know, people going around buying all the gear and stuff and wearing it around, even just walking down the street, people, you know, shouting at you, saying hello, and it's mad nearly to think it's actually happening. Again, it's the people probably out here, and then our coach Lino is just, he's an understanding coach and treats you as a person, so that helps as well. It's hard to find coaches like that in Europe especially.
Yeah, and I understand he was the person who made the initial contact with you about going to turn pro and play for Ferrol.
Yeah, he contacted me a few years ago, and just to be honest, I never had it in my head to go abroad. It was other people that probably said it to me, but I was happy living in Ireland. And then he contacted me again in last May, and it was like a gut feeling, and early was like, oh, here, I'll go out and try it. I flew out in May for just one day just to see what it was like with my boyfriend Hillary, and you know, I just walked around the town and went to the gym and stuff just to see the living situation, and it felt right, so I said, here, I'll go and give it a go.
The Euro Cup competition, I suppose in men's soccer terms, it'd be like the Europa League underneath the Champions League. Yeah, but still huge.
Yeah, no, it's like, I was only saying it to Daddy that this time last year, you know, we were looking at the London Lions were in the final, and we were saying, you know, it'll be cool to play in that, and it's great that they're there or whatever. And then we were saying the other day, this time last year we were saying it, and now we're there. Now I think we all surprise ourselves as well on how far we've gone with the results, so it's a cool achievement.
Huge, huge performances tonight. Claire Malia is by far the MVP of the game. In just under 27 minutes, she was 11 for 15 with 27 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. I mean, my goodness. Every time she shot, it was like she couldn't miss.
Look, it's a fantastic example for young male or female players. If they want to choose basketball as a professional career, they have this route now that you've taken to go to Europe and play for a fantastic team like Ferrol.
Like, a lot of people have in their head that you have to just go to America, you know, that's the only way, you have to go to college there and then go on professional from there. But I went to America for a few months and I didn't like it and came back. But it's good to show people that you can go and play professionally in Europe. You don't have to go move away to America for 4 or 5 years first, and you know, it can still be achieved now. Depends on what people want as well. Everyone has their own journey, so it's whatever suits them best and makes them happy.
That was Claire Melia talking to Darragh Maloney on Saturday Sport last Saturday. And Orla, I mean, she sounds like a very, very mature 25-year-old. And as you said, she's playing in one of the best leagues in the world. It's not America, but, you know, Spanish basketball is extremely strong.
Yeah, exactly. It's the second best domestic league in the world. And, you know, that's where we have now an Irish player playing. In terms of progressing beyond this level, you know, I'm fortunate enough to know Claire and as well interviewed her a couple of times. Claire looks for more than just basketball. She looks for off the court. And that's exactly what Baxi Ferrol have given her. And the people in Galicia have just opened to her, welcomed her with open arms. You know, there's an Instagram page, Claire's Gang, and they follow her everywhere. And I was on to them recently saying, why is there no St. Patrick's Day parade there? And if there is, she has to be the Grand Marshal. So maybe next year. But look, they've welcomed her with open arms. She's the potential to go to a higher level, which is the EuroLeague, which would be the top tier in the world. In terms of, you mentioned America, the WNBA is in the summer, so it's a different season to the rest of the world. So you'd love to see an Irish player play at that level, and I mean, if there's an opportunity and it's right for Claire, you'd love to see her do it. And look, it's all about timing, opportunity, and, you know, eyes being on her. And look, there's no better place to be than a Euro Cup final for that.
Pardon the pun here, but if the ball keeps bouncing for her, how long a career could Claire get out of this?
Like, Claire is only 25 and is already in the conversation of one of the greatest players we've ever produced. You know, the key thing for me, I keep seeing it, that history, she's the first female player to reach this level, and she is, but she's also the first player that grew up playing in the Irish system that has made a European final. I think would have been the first from probably early enough on in the competition. So you now have a player like Claire that is inspiring kids across the country, whether it's Monastereven, Donegal, Cork, Galway, that are growing into their local club and are now saying, why can't that be me? So, like, from personal perspective of Claire, she could go down as one of our best already. And from a more of a community standpoint, it's a huge opportunity for basketball.
And she scored, I think she was the top scorer in the first leg. She scored over the two legs, she scored 40 points in total. Just incredible against that level of opposition. That was against Lyon. Next up is Lille. Lille are previous champions, so they're obviously a top quality side. And what time is the game on and where can we watch it?
So it's on tomorrow night. You can watch it on the FIBA YouTube channel. It'll be available. They've streamed both all of the games so far in the competition. So the first leg tomorrow night, the second leg being next Wednesday. I know there's a huge crowd of Irish going over to tomorrow night to Galicia, and also a lot of the Portlaoise Panthers crew heading over to go over to Lille next week as well. So you can watch all of the games, or both games, on the FIBA YouTube channel.
And the Galicia obviously is the area which is the Celtic bit of Spain, so I suppose that that's a little bit of knowledge, but it sort of suits the fact that she's there and she's getting such a reaction from the Galicians. And good luck to her tomorrow. What time is tip off, did you say?
I believe it's I think it's 7:30 Irish time.
7:30, brilliant. We'll look out for that tomorrow, and it is on the FIBA website. You'll be able to spot a link for it there. Orla Keeling, thank you very much for joining us. After the break, we are going to talk rugby.
Game on, rugby.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6:53 this Tuesday evening. Delighted to say we are joined now by Neil Tracy, RT Sports rugby reporter. Neil, lots of rugby stories happening today, but I suppose it is the big Castle Bar trip that we need to talk about first. And Connacht hoping to face Munster in front of 25,000 people, but they will do so without head coach Pete Wilkins. Oh, we have a bit of trouble with... Everything I said was true there, Ruby. So I'm glad to say that.
I have no doubt about that.
Once again, we'll be operating with coach Pete Wilkins for this week's United Rugby Championship Interpro against Munster and Castlebar. He was away from the team in the build-up to last week's defeat to the Ospreys, and the province have confirmed that he remains on sick leave, with scrum coach Cully Tucker leading the coaching team again ahead of this week's bumper derby. And it's 25,000 people in Castlebar. It'll be great for Connacht to have an audience create that hostile atmosphere they love to create.
I'm telling you, they'll have Bundy Aki, Finlay Beale and Mac Hansen and Keane Prendergast back as well to bolster their side and look to turn over Munster, which would be a big scalp for them, and a scalp they need to take as well for their season, Andrew. So, Colly Tucker, Scott Fardy, Mark Sexton and John Muldoon will be in charge. But is there any update on Pete Wilkins, Neil?
Neil, are you there? Yeah, we don't seem to have Neil. Yeah, Neil, we're just wondering, is there any update on Pete? Is he okay? Is it sick leave? Is it gardening leave? What's going on?
Sorry, Andrew, I couldn't hear you there for a couple of minutes. But yeah, at the moment it is sick leave. We really don't know too much else about it, other than Pete Wilkins just wasn't with the squad last week. He isn't going to be with them this week. And scrum coach Cully Tucker is stepping up to lead the team, the management team this week. It'll be the usuals, Mark Sexton, John Muldoon and Scott Fardy alongside him as well for the week. And what a big week it is as well. And you wouldn't want something like this to be overshadowing a game like they have at the weekend, where they've got a sold out 26,000-27,000 people coming to Castlebar for the biggest attendance ever for a home Connacht game. And look, they have all their internationals back with them as well this week, after they were arrested for the Six Nations. And there doesn't seem to be any great concern that there's going to be anything falling between the cracks preparation-wise this week. Everyone's stepping up and they're just hoping to put on a show on Saturday.
27,000 people would be a show to put on, and those internationals will be a big help. Do they have to improve much from the Ospreys game? I mean, only Ulster were the only Irish team to win last weekend.
Defensively, Ruby, is where they have to improve. And to be totally honest, it's where Munster have to improve as well. It's been an issue, I think, for all of the Irish provinces, aside from Leinster, particularly last weekend. Connacht, they scored 40 points away from home, but you still lose a game. It's just not really acceptable. And similar for Munster as well, as I said, against Glasgow, where Munster led that game up until the 76th, 77th minute, and in the end had to settle for a losing bonus point. So both teams are more than capable of scoring a lot of points. They play some really, really good attacking rugby. But I think maybe people who might have watched Against the Heads last night on RT2 would have seen highlighted just how poor some of the defensive stuff is with them. And I think particularly for Connacht, it's been a long-running thing that they need to, if they are going to start picking up match points and climbing up into the top half of the table, defence is where it is going to start and end.
It usually does. Sam Prendergast signed a new contract today with Leinster. Jack Crowley hasn't signed yet. How's that all looking?
Look, Munster say there is no update on it, and that is just something Munster will say on it. You know, it's very much an official line. From what I've heard, I don't think there is. I think it's leaning far more towards Jack Crowley staying than Jack Crowley going. There is an offer on the table from the Premiership, from the Leicester Tigers, and it is a very, very attractive offer. From what I've heard, it's not maybe as much as is being reported around that €700 mark or £600,000, but it's still a really, really attractive offer. Now, it's just down to a bit of haggling at the moment, and I think the longer it goes on, like Jack Crowley, he's a smart man, I would say. He knows that he has Munster and the IRFU in a position where they really can't afford to lose them because of the lack of experience they have. But if I was to be a betting man, Ruby, I would be expecting that Jack Crowley is playing his rugby at Munster next season.
And a word on Sam Prendergast. Should we read into anything that it's not an IRFU central contract, Neil?
No, I wouldn't say so, to be honest. Just the age he's at, he's only just gone 22 years of age. Like I was saying it on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, personally, I would have both himself and Jack Crowley on central contracts. But I think it's just one of these things where, like, I'm sure from the RFU's point of view, they're happy to just kick that can down the road. We don't really know how long the contract is that Prendergast has signed. That's not something the RFU or that Leinster tend to confirm. The suspicion would be it's probably a one-year deal. And I would imagine that would probably suit Prendergast as well, to be able to maybe try put a bit more pressure and get an extra zero or, you know, a higher figure on that contract next season.
Neil, thank you very much for joining us on Game On. That's all we have time for tonight. From Ruby and myself, we shall say goodbye. And Damien O'Mara is on Game On tomorrow night. And after the news, it is Betta De Silva with some of the best music in town.